Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Autism Stories. I'm your host, Doug Bletcher, the founder of Autism Personal Coach. Autistic people are the true experts of the autistic experience, and Autism Stories is where we interview autistic people to learn from their stories, experiences, and get their insights. If you would like to be notified about each week's episode of Autism Stories, we suggest you subscribe on your favorite podcast listening platform. We would also appreciate it if you could give us a positive rating and review, as it will help others to learn about Autism Stories. On today's episode, Stephanie Calhoun joins us to discuss opening up a dog grooming academy, how her academy focuses on the needs of neurodiverse students, and the history of dogs and how they became domesticated. We hope you enjoy today's conversation. Stephanie, thanks so much for joining me here on Autism Stories.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I wanted to start off our conversation by learning, where does your story in the autistic community begin?
Well, I was diagnosed with ADHD when I was 18. Though I did find out my kindergarten teacher should have told my mom I should have been diagnosed. But my mom never sent me to get the diagnosis. But I kind of, during lockdown in 2020, I was just grooming at the time, full time. And so we had to completely stop for 6 weeks and I had nothing to do. So I learned a lot about myself. I think a lot of people kind of did during that time. And I actually started learning more about ADHD, and then that kind of pushed me into learning about autism, and then I was like, oh, this makes sense. And so it just kind of, I learned about it, and after a while I talked to my therapist and my psychiatrist about it, and they were like, they were both kind of like, we'd have to send you for testing for actual diagnosis, and we could do that, but like, we're not disagreeing with you. But my insurance doesn't pay for all the testing, so I haven't gotten like the official diagnosis yet. But that's kind of just, I kind of got into it. And as I started learning, getting into teaching for my school, I was kind of finding my path, and it was a struggle because of the ADHD and autism. I'm not very good at the detail stuff. It's hard for me to sit down and do all of the detail stuff. I'm much more of a big picture person. I was really struggling with a lot of that stuff while putting the school together, and really started to put work into figuring out systems that worked for me. And my coach, actually, I had a coach that was teaching me, kind of helping me with putting together my programs. And she was like, you know, you're learning this all of this about yourself, but you're also you're making it more, because of this, you've been making this all much more accessible, like without even thinking about it. I just started doing things. And she's like, why don't you make that your main focus? I'm like, oh, like that does make sense. And so I found out that a large portion of the grooming community is some sort of neurodivergent. There was a lot I could do to help. So it's kind of the story.
Hearing you say a large portion of the grooming community is neurodivergent, it does not surprise me at all.
Yeah, we tend to flock towards the animals. They make a little more sense. Mm-hmm. So
now, you were just talking about accessibility. You're the founder of the Meditative Groomer that makes pet grooming more accessible to anyone, with a special emphasis on neurodiverse learners. So I'm wondering what some challenges might have been for you, you know, in terms of learning and understanding how to be a groomer.
For me, it was very, it was very interesting. I'm mostly self-taught. School was very expensive. It took a lot because there's so few grooming schools. Like, I would also have to have traveled to go to a school. So it was a big commitment, and I did not do well in school when I was a kid, and I didn't do well in college because I didn't know that my brain didn't work the same as everybody else, and I was just kind of slamming my head against the wall all the time. And I was really, like, I didn't want to commit to, like, going to school and, you know, then end up failing. So I ended up kind of just learning on the job, working. I started working as a bather and kind of just helping out as much as I can. And then I found there was, like, shows and, like, webinars and stuff that I could do so I could learn more. But I really struggled. I missed out on a lot of things because I didn't go to school. So, like, I didn't learn like the background, like the CPR and first aid, didn't know what to do in an emergency, which that happens sometimes, you know, working with live animals. I didn't learn anything like really about cleaning and sanitation. And I didn't learn anything about like the history of dogs and dog breeds and anatomy. And as I've started to learn how to learn better, like by myself, I've learned a lot of these things as I've been a groomer just over the last 10 years, but it would have been really helpful for me to learn it way at the very beginning. And I realized that I went to quite a few of the other schools to kind of just see how they run. And I realized that none of them really, there was great schools, but none of them were very neurodivergent friendly. It was all very, very fast paced. You never really learn to talk to clients. You're just kind of given a dog, and you, like, there'll be like 20 other students and one teacher, and you're just like, you have to just kind of figure it out as you go. And the teacher comes by and checks on you, basically. And for someone who, I mean, even someone who is neurotypical, they were struggling with it. But like, I was at one school for like 2 weeks, and it was a great school. They turn out great groomers, but it was so stressful the whole time because there was so much going on. And I just realized that so many of these schools, it's like that. And I wanted to really do things in my school to try to help with that. That's the answer to my question.
Through the meditative groomer, you teach people how to get into the field of grooming pets, whether it's being a bather, a groomer's assistant, a groomer, or a stylist. So what would be suggestions you have for those that are interested in grooming but aren't sure which of those positions might be right for them?
The way I actually set up my school is that it's kind of a building block thing. So you'll start with learning the bathing position, and you can just take that one program and then go work as a bather for a while if you wanted. And then the next, you can keep building at your own pace. And I also have, I travel a lot for seminars and stuff. I'll teach at shows. And so I've been also working to form relationships with other groomers in the area and across the country, that like if someone contacted me and was like, I'm curious, but I'm like still on the fence, I don't know if I want to like take the leap, I have like suggested different salons they can go to that they're willing to be like, yeah, we'll bring you in and have you watch us for a day or whatever works for them, so that they can still dip their toe without fully committing. And usually once someone starts, then they don't want to stop. So
what's been your experience like with other groomers? Like in other communities, there's a lot of like feel, you know, a lot of competitiveness. Like when you reach out to them, like what's been your experience?
It's usually one or two ways. Either they aren't really interested in getting to know anybody else and they just want to do their own thing, or they are super, super friendly. we all look forward to going to shows because it's our time to get together with our tribe. A lot of, you know, like, especially like my area, like we do a lot of like meetups and, you know, dinners together. That we do have a lot of that like networking going on with a majority, I would say. There's just some that they want to kind of be their own. They're like, I'm just going to do my thing over here and please leave me alone. And that's fine.
You were talking a little bit earlier about first aid and CPR. I know you teach a class on this, so I'm wondering what life-saving techniques are vital for people to understand, because for us pet owners, myself included, we love our pets, but, you know, like, I think that's one of the biggest fears. Like, if something like that happens, what do you do?
Yeah, I actually, so the class that I teach is about 5 hours long. It is very in-depth, and there's actually an 8-hour version where it goes into like taking care of like senior pets and stuff like that, because there gets, senior pets are a whole nother level once they get older. And so I talk about like CPR and choking and bleeding, like wounds, different bites from insects and snakes and stuff, and then heat and cold injuries. But I'd say like the most important thing that we actually talk about is the, we call it the snout to tail assessment. And it's basically, there's two different versions where one is more of a, like a wellness thing. And we suggest to everybody, because these classes are meant for pet owners, and you do a wellness kind of exam every month, because your vet only sees your dog every 6 or 12 months, you know. Groomers, we see it more often, so that's why I started teaching, is so I could teach my students. But we see dogs every 6-8 weeks, and we might notice differences. But if an owner is on a regular basis checking over their entire dog, they'll notice differences in their dog, you know, if there's something going different, if their hair is different, if maybe there's a new bump, they can notice that. And so this wellness one, and we recommend you keep a journal, and you just kind of, you go over the whole dog, you feel everything on the dog, you check their like vitals, you'll check like capillary refill, heart rate. And there's another one that I'm not having recall of right now, but we check like vitals, then, you know, just making note if there's like a bump somewhere, or like, you know, this bump is growing a little bit, you know, those types of things, so that we can tell our vets when we go in, we can say, oh, there's this new thing, because they might not know, you know, they see all of these animals and only see them every 6 to 12 months, that they're not going to be able to remember every little bump that was on that dog. That's why we have that one. And then there's the injury version of the snout to tail assessment, which is more in an emergency, trying to kind of, it's quicker and more focused on like essential life support. It's just, you know, making sure that they are breathing and their heart is beating and those kind of things first. And then, you know, checking to see if there's an injury somewhere. And it gives the owners kind of this really good basis on how to handle the situation. Even though there's a million different situations, it kind of narrows it down more to like, it could either be these, you know, few things, and then you should do this kind of, it's a little more broken down and easier for people to understand, like, okay, so I need to do this and then I'll go to the vet. Or I just need to go to the vet first, or, you know, depending on what's going on. And it gives the owner the ability to stabilize their dogs in an emergency too, in order to get them to the vet. Because some people, they have a very long drive to the vet, or their vet has a like 8-hour long waiting list. Being able to get your dog stable and at least like get them breathing, get their heart beating or whatever they need to keep, you know, to stay alive, so that they can get into the vet and the vet can then take them from there. I think the whole thing's important, but definitely the snout to tail assessment.
Many autistic people love history, so I'm really interested in a class you teach called The History of Dogs and How They Became Domesticated. What are some of the highlights of that history?
My favorite part really is talking about how basically, so dogs are relatives of the gray wolf. The gray wolf was, you know, they're descendants actually of the gray wolf relatives. And basically the wolves started to, like, their weaker ones that, like, got cast out would be like, oh, if I hang out by these humans, they'll leave their scraps of food and I'll just keep all of the other wolves away. And so they kind of form, like, I love how they form that, like, symbiotic relationship. And it just became like, yeah, these cast outs from the pack then form this relationship with humans that in other case for the pack, they wouldn't have had as much of that relationship. And just how they kind of domesticated each other almost. And then, like, they started using the wolves, as they were, you know, going into wolves, their dogs, they started using them for, you know, hunting because they were hunter-gatherers, and so the dogs would help with hunting. And then as we became more agricultural, they kind of also morphed with that, and they started to help them with the agricultural side, either herding dogs and stuff like that. I find all of that, like, background really interesting on how the dogs became what they are and how involved with humans they are.
It's interesting you talking about dogs hanging around humans for food. My dog definitely learned that from her ancestors, but she doesn't hang around for the scraps. If she wants the meal, she wants to leave me the scraps.
So, yeah, she wants the good stuff.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, they definitely got the good side.
Yeah. I wanted to get back to talking a little bit about accessibility and inclusive learning and training. Since you do that with meditative groomer, how do you make the training for your learners more accessible and inclusive?
So I have small class sizes. I only do 4 students tops at a time. I have what I call the vibe room, which is a room where I have, like, a little couch and a chair where they can go in there and close the door if they need, you know, if they're overstimulated or they just need a break, because there's a lot of noises going on. Even I have small class sizes and I only have one dog for each student at a time. So I don't have, like, cages of dogs barking, but with the dryers and stuff, it can still get a little overstimulating, and sometimes we just need a break. And so I have that vibe room there. And then, like, I teach them how to talk to their clients about, like, what they want done on their dog. And because some of us struggle with talking to other people, I have a little list where they can write notes on it, and it just helps guide them on, like, remembering what to ask. I have a lot of signs for, like, the little tiny, like, the little things that might slip your mind kind of thing. So, like, what this cleaning product is or different things like that. And I have those ups to kind of, as a, like, for reminders, but also it's so that they don't have to think about it as much. I don't want them thinking about as all of the little details. I want them concentrating on the dog. I have those signs up so they don't have to think as much. I have, like, a little product list that helps you decide which one. It's right there so they can easily just, like, oh, I need to get this. Stuff like that. I have a variety of different teachers so that they learn different ways, because my way of grooming might not work for everyone else. Even just the difference between right and left-handed. I had a left-handed student and I'm right-handed, and it was very difficult to show her how to scissor, because I'm like, I hold it this way, but you should hold it this way. So I have a variety of teachers so that I can have them help me in certain situations that maybe they would be better at. And just so that they get different ways of like doing things in general, and they can kind of work with what works best for them. And then I do, at the end of the week, I do a weekly check-in with everybody, like a little private in the office. We just talk about like, you know, are you having any troubles with anything? What can I do to help you? Kind of just getting that feedback. I'm just, in general, I'm trying to learn all the time. It's always that you never know what you might come across. So I'm trying to learn all the time. And then I work really hard to communicate with my students that I want to work with you in whatever you need help with. So it's very much like, okay, you're struggling with this. Let's figure out how we can help you not struggle. I try to work with each individual and just really do. That's why I have the small class sizes, so I can work more individually with everybody. So,
and how can our listeners learn more about the Meditative Groomer?
The website's meditativegroomer.com, and then Facebook mostly. I eventually will start working on TikTok, maybe someday. Really bad at that kind of stuff, so. But yeah, mostly my website and my Facebook.
So I kind of wanted to end our conversation talking about podcasting. As you have become a co-host of a podcast, Grooming the Spectrum, in this past year, what can people expect if they listen to Grooming the Spectrum?
Mostly chaos. I don't do well with like writing notes usually. It can be really distracting for me to have notes because I am a slow reader, but I can like really talk when I get excited about things. And then so my co-host Meg is very like basically writes a script for themselves. So luckily Meg kind of keeps me, you know, from floating too high, too close to the sun, because otherwise it would just be complete chaos and tangents of like random, oh, I read about this research paper. Because when I get into something that I'm like, I did a lot of research into, it all comes like flooding back and I can't stop. So there's one research paper on D&D and neurodivergence. And I think I refer to it in almost every episode. And Meg has to stop me from going off on a tangent about how good of a research paper it was. But we try to do a balance of more informative episodes where we talk about a different topic. We've done unmasking, depression, decision paralysis, and some other ones that I can't remember. But we do like full-length episodes where it's just us talking about it. We've done a lot of research into each one where we talk more about like the science and stuff like that, that we at least what we can understand, but just kind of talking about that and like how we deal with things. And we talk about, we have a group called Grooming on the Spectrum. It's a support group on Facebook. We'll ask people ahead of time, like, hey, what do you want to talk about? Or like, you know, ask questions and we'll bring that up. But just, you know, anything that we want to, that relates to that kind of topic that we're on. And then we try to also do about the same amount of interviews with different groomers who are neurodivergent. We've done different ones with a bunch of groomers that you probably wouldn't know the name of, but they're all really good and like really good and interesting stories, kind of like what you do, but just more grooming related. Yeah. So and yeah, the group also where we have, we'll like post, you know, how are you doing today? Or like we'll post if we find like a cool TikTok video or YouTube video or whatever, just sharing to support each other. And then we also were planning for next October, we're doing a retreat where people can get tickets. We're going to get a cabin in Baraboo, Wisconsin, and we're going to have some like classes on mostly neurodivergent related grooming things. And we have a couple, we're going to have a couple different teachers and just kind of all hang out at a cabin together. So.
Sounds like fun. Well, Stephanie, thanks so much for joining me today. It was great to meet you and learn more about your grooming.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
Thanks so much to Stephanie for the conversation. To learn more about Stephanie and her grooming academy, please check out the link in the podcast description for this episode. Here at Autism Personal Coach, our clients are the experts, our coaches are the guides. The majority of supports for autistics are not helpful. They try to fix us, not support us. That's why many are confused when we say our clients are the experts. Experts of their lived experience. Our clients are the experts for what's worked for them and about the things that they need and want in their lives. Our coaches first listen to our clients and then ask thoughtful questions, offer resources, and strategize with our clients so they can get what they need to thrive. Would you want a guide in your life to coach you to get you the things you desire? If so, then visit autismpersonalcoach.com for more information. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autism Stories, and if you did, if you could tell a friend, foe, or anyone you know about it so they could have the same enjoyable and educational experience as you when listening to Autism Stories, it would be very much appreciated. Until next time, I'm Doug Bletcher of Autism Personal Coach. Talk to you then.